Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. This is the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Dan Foster of National Review Online in for the cruising Jim Garrity again today. Dan, things a little bit out of order, but we'll still start with the good martini today. And that's that even liberals have seen the light. We don't get to say that very often, but we've seen it in Portland. We've seen it in Oakland. We've seen it in a number of places around the country as finally these liberal mayors have had enough of people desecrating public parks, stealing stuff from local vendors, essentially turning the whole thing into a drug-fueled rage and not really remembering why they were there in the first place. For the most part, I think people in these communities, even these very left-leaning communities, are finally happy to see these people go because they've been just a huge blight on society. And the good news is that thanks to jumping the gun, President Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and all these other people, they own this movement. Congratulations.
Well, I think that's all to the good, but I have a somewhat counterintuitive take on Mayor Bloomberg's raid downtown here in New York City today, which is, interestingly enough, pretty similar in structure to my take on our intervention in Libya. Now, stay with me for a second.
Okay.
I thought that we waited too long in Libya, that if we were going to enforce a no-fly zone early on when it became clear that, you know, civilian populations were being targeted, that we could do that, that it would be humanitarian, humane, just, but yet we wouldn't own the resistance, we wouldn't own the rebels, and we wouldn't be in bed explicitly with potential jihadists. I thought, you know, by the time we got around to intervening, that we the problem was that we owned the outcome of the war. So it was on us if Gaddafi stayed in power, and we owned the resistance. I feel the same way about this raid. I wish that, you know, the day it became clear that these people were a nuisance and they weren't going anywhere and that they were breaking park rules, that Brookfield Properties and Mayor Bloomberg had taken swift action to get rid of them. The problem is, in the intervening time, they did an awesome job of discrediting themselves with the vast majority of the American public. They were dying. I mean, Occupy Wall Street, I think, was on its last legs. Winter was coming, and General Winter is the, you know, is the fiercest foe. I think their only hope, if Bloomberg and NYPD hadn't stepped in, would have been sending a machine back in time to get better occupiers or something like that. They would have had to go the Terminator route. So I have this counterintuitive take that I wish Mayor Bloomberg hadn't picked this arbitrary day 3 months after the fact to move in and clear these people out of the park, because I don't think it's the best possible PR outcome. I think that you're going to stoke some sympathy for people who basically didn't have any left, any goodwill left with the American public. And, you know, they might win a legal battle, which is a bit of foreshadowing, perhaps, for the crazy martini.
It certainly is. And so I guess my crazy martini is perhaps your good martini, because ultimately, at least in New York City, they get to come back to Zuccotti Park and wait for all this to be adjudicated. So the city and the property company, according to this Judge Lucy Billings, said that the park and the city cannot evict protesters or enforce rules published after the occupation began, or otherwise prevent protesters from reentering the park with tents and other property previously utilized. So if the city wants to maintain order, well, that's too bad. If you actually own the property, that's too bad. So I guess it's good news from your very interesting perspective, Dan, because if these folks get to come back, they get to make greater fools out of themselves, and the American people will discredit them even more. So interesting take.
Well, I was disheartened to see this ruling. I wish that maybe Bloomberg had sort of, and maybe he has, maybe I'm not giving him enough credit, but had looked into the legal implications of what he was doing. Look, the weird thing, and maybe this is an argument against these kind of quasi-public spaces, but the backstory, in case anyone who's listening doesn't know, is that the Zuccotti Park is owned by a private corporation, but it was a condition of their original real estate development deal that they make this park accessible to the public. That's all well and good, but there are various quirks in city law about the way that public spaces have to be used. They can't be closed at night and various other things. So the controversy is that Zuccotti posted rules at the park after the Occupy Wall Street protests started that said things like no tents, no storage of personal property, no obstructing the passage of others through the park. These are all completely reasonable rules, and rules that Brookfield, as the property owners, have the right to establish and enforce down there at the park. The problem that this judge sees is that they were established, in her mind, I guess, arbitrarily and an ad hoc basis, and specifically to thwart the efforts of Occupy Wall Street. But I don't know that that case has legs. I think that there's a fairly good chance that the city and the NYPD could win this one.
Yeah, God forbid you get to decide what to do with your own property. Boy, that's a really anti-American sentiment right there, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. So like I said, they have the right to enforce rules. No roller skating, all these things, you know, no ice cream, whatever they want. They can enforce a lot of rules down there at that park as long as it remains open for public use. The problem that this judge has is when they made the rules. Now, you wouldn't think you'd have to make a rule, perhaps, about defecation or drug use or, filling the entire park with drum circles. So maybe it makes a little sense that these rules didn't spring up until there was, you know, a need for them.
Yeah, but when people came in with a complete lack of common sense and were voting with spirit fingers on what to do next. Usually don't plan for that when you originally obtain property. But, like you mentioned, winter's coming, and regardless of how this happens, I'm sure they'll be back in their parents' basements in Greenwich before too long. So on to martini number three now, which is actually the bad martini. And there's a whole batch of new presidential polls out on the Republican side, and some suggest a really tight race. One in Iowa even suggests a four-way race now among Romney, Gingrich, Kaine, and Ron. Paul. Another one suggests that it's Romney, Kaine, and Gingrich very close. Others suggest that it's Romney, Gingrich, and Kaine has really fallen off. And if, in fact, Kaine has slipped back a little bit, I think the mainstream media is making a mistake, Dan, in assuming that people are chalking it up to all these allegations. And there may be certainly some impact from that. But Herman Kaine's biggest problem, I think, has been his statements on foreign policy and just giving the impression that he's not up to speed, even in a way that a relatively new presidential candidate ought to be. The latest evidence of this, unfortunately, is his appearance with the editorial board of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And these are a little bit painful. You mentioned awkward silence.
I'm cringing already in anticipation.
Earlier in the week, and unfortunately there's two of these. Here's the first very simple question about how Kaine feels about the president's policy in Libya.
So you agreed with President Obama on Libya or not?
Okay, Libya. President Obama supported the uprising, correct?
And then just when you think he's got his mind back on track, no.
I do not agree with the way he handled it for the following reason. That's a different one. I got to go back to see. Got all this stuff twirling around in my head.
All right, Dan, you're out of your misery now.
Is it over yet? Oh, that was painful. Oh, look, I think you hit it right on the head that if Herman Kaine is falling back in this race, it has he by and large survived the harassment allegations so far, you know, barring any new developments there. But he showed the same bad managerial instincts and campaign instincts in that affair as he does here. So let's leave aside the substance or the lack thereof of his answer. The thing that gets me is the fact that he's sitting with an editorial review board in Wisconsin, and he's allowing it to be videotaped. I mean, he should be talking to every newspaper there is in Iowa, and there should be a handler there that makes sure that there's not, you know, that he's not going to produce any gaffe videos. I don't know why you would allow a meeting like this to be taped if you weren't 100%, you know, confident in your own ability or your candidate's ability, if you're his handlers, to look good. I mean, on the substance, it's a big problem. I mean, especially because he spent the last few months telling naysayers that he's been studying up on foreign policy and that he's the tiger in the tall grass and don't underestimate him on national security. And this was just a terrible, terrible answer. And look, it's not a gotcha question about who the prime minister of Tajikistan is.
Right.
It's a question about one of the shooting wars that the United States is currently involved in. I mean, he should be able to answer that coherently. So I think this is really bad.
Unfortunately, it's following a pattern, and there's still time. You can bone up pretty quickly on some of this stuff, and hopefully has a chance to do that, because there's a lot of good things about Herman Kaine, but he's quickly falling into a stereotype here if he doesn't right this ship, and who knows if it's not too late already, given the shift we're seeing to Gingrich in this kind of revolving door among the more conservative candidates here. But I hate to point that out because we like Herman Kaine, but that was just rough. Dan, we hate to leave it there, too, but we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Talk to you later, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for listening today. We will be back on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.